Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And especially in times like this where we don't really have control over great big giant things, but we do have control over how neat our knicker drawer is. And mine is a thing of beauty and joy. It's so neat.
This week on Walking the Dog, I chatted to one of the most adored faces on TV. It's only Lorraine Kelly. We didn't do it in person because of lockdown. And we're highly responsible citizens, I'll have you know. So instead, Lorraine and I caught up on the phone whilst walking our dogs separately. She was with her Border Terrier, Angus, in Berkshire, and I was with Raymond in North London. Lorraine talked about wanting to be a fighter pilot when she was growing up. I can so see her in those aviators, bossing the skies. How she got into TV as a local news reporter. She told me all about her husband Steve and her daughter Rosie. And we also touched on why Piers Morgan refers to Lorraine as an iron fist in a velvet glove. Lorraine also told me about her book Shine, which is a really life-affirming read, and I thoroughly recommend it. And I need to drop in that she's very proud to be the face of Tails.com, which is a food subscription service for dogs, where everything is tailor-made and delivered to your door, so check them out. It was a fairly blustery day, so apologies if you can hear the odd gust blowing through our mics, but look, it's a small price to pay to hear the LK. The woman is just a total joy. She should be available on the NHS. Sort it out now, someone. Please rate, review and subscribe if you enjoyed our chat. Here's Lorraine.
I'm just coming to pick Angus up because Steve's had him out this morning. This wee dog has never had more exercise in all his
life. And Steve is your other half.
He is. Hi, Angus. Hello, baby.
I noticed so Steve funny. Didn't get a hello.
Angus has ran up to see me, so... He's fine. Come on, wee baby. He's going crazy. He's going nuts. I know, baby. I think we might put your lead on because you're most likely to run over.
Do you know, when Lorraine was saying, I know, baby, I know, I fantasised that she was my mother then, and it felt really nice. So, this is Walking the Dog. I'm Emily Dean, and I'm not here in person with, because... Me and my guest are both responsible individuals and we're social distancing. But I'm on the phone with, while we're both on our separate dog walks, I'm going to go full on national treasure, Lorraine Kelly.
And I'm just walking by the banks of the Thames. I live near Maidenhead.
Lovely.
And there's some fantastic walks here all around sort of Cookham Dean, where we used to live years ago. So we know it quite well. And it's just lovely. And it's actually, I don't know what I would do without this dog. He's just brilliant. The only thing is, at the moment, he looks a little bit like a burst couch because he was due to be stripped. He's a Border Terrier and he was due to be stripped. And of course, we've not been able to do that. So he's just a big ball of fluff. He looks a bit three times the size that he really is.
And Angus, you know, he's part of your routine in a way as well, isn't
he? He's basically my son. He's the son that I never had. And he is so much part of our family. And he needs a lot, you know, he's got bundles and bundles of energy. So much energy. And he needs, you know, he really needs to be walked and to be exercised. And we used to put him to, I mean, he honestly is like a child. But used to put him to this wee place like once a week so that he could meet other dogs. And he'd get loads of friends. So I think he's quite missing that.
I'm with Ray in North London and we're in a park near here and he's just met someone. So I'm going to leave them to chat.
Cause yeah, I think so.
They meet friends, Lorraine.
Oh, it's so cute. So do I. And they do this thing though. I don't know if Ray does it, but Angus does this kind of Mexican standoff. And sometimes just eyes them up for ages. And then, of course, they go crazy and run about. I know. Or sometimes he lies down. Sometimes, and he does yoga as well. He's a yoga dog. He does downward dog. He has this mad sort of pose where he just sort of, he's like a sphinx. Very strange. he's a cracking wee dog. He's just funny and he's got a great sort of temperament, you know. And like I say, he would walk all day. I mean, we've had him out for miles and miles and miles. Not so much now because we're only allowed out once a day. But before all of this, he would keep going all day. You know, we've had him up in Orkney and you're obviously keeping him on the lead, but he loves it up in the islands. He loves it up in Orkney and he loves the fresh air and he just gets all excited and it's great. You see, the joy, it's the joy of dogs, isn't it? And when I get back from work, that enthusiastic welcome, I mean, I could have been away for two minutes.
I love
it. Or 2 weeks.
Is this proof we're middle-aged, that it used to be the joy of sex, now it's the joy of dogs?
That's how your life changed. Absolutely. Or the joy of food. It's more about what you're having for your tea than what you're going to get up to, that's for sure.
Did you always love Border Terriers? Because Angus is a Border Terrier.
We did. We had lovely, lovely Rocky, who was smashing. He was a great wee dog. We're just at this special place that he likes by the river, so I'm going to have to let him go in. He likes to swim, and obviously he likes to drink the really disgusting river water rather than the nice water out the tap. And he always goes for the bit of the river that's full of mud and rolls about in it, of course. But he loves that. He's actually swimming in the river, believe it or not. But he's fine. I'm keeping an eye on him. And he doesn't go out too far. He doesn't go out too far at all. And he sort of more paddles a wee bit. But he really enjoys it. It's really funny to watch.
If I lived with Lorraine Kelly, I would not be straying too far from home. I'd know I'd locked out.
He's looking
so
at the
tell
dogs.
Me around about the Border Terrier thing, because so your other dog, you'd lost Rocky.
Rocky was a smashing dog, absolutely brilliant. We had him when Rosie was little. Steve's a cameraman and he used to work in a show called Vets in Practice. I don't know if you remember it, smashing show. And he was, because Rosie was saying, she really wanted a dog, and we were really, we thought, that'd be great. And it was all the vets actually said to Steve, Border Terriers are your best bet because they're great with kids, great personality. You know, they're full of energy and they're very loyal and they're good fun.
Yeah.
So, that's why we went for Border Terrier. And we were so lucky with Rocky. He was a smashing, smashing wee dog. But when he died, it was really hard because I thought to myself, well, I would like another dog, but you never replace them, do you? You don't replace them because you can't, you can't replace a person, so you can't replace a dog. But we knew eventually we would want another one. And when finally that I moved down here and I wasn't commuting up and down to Scotland all the time, and because you can't, that's not fair on the dog. You've got to make sure that your lifestyle suits the dog.
Yeah. Did you have dogs, because you grew up in Glasgow?
Yeah, I did. I grew up in the Gorbals, actually. So we had a wee one, now it'd be called a bijou studio flat, but it was actually called a single end. It was just one room for me and my mum and dad. And we never had dogs. My mum wasn't a big fan. And of course, has turned out to be the biggest fan of all of Angus and adores him, So it's quite strange. So I said, I wish I had dogs growing up, but my mum and dad both worked. And again, it's not fair. You've always got to consider your wee dog. Come on, baby. Come on, darling. Come on. Good boy. Good boy. Oh, you're so clever.
Your mum, I was fascinated to read this, Lorraine, because I read your book, Shine, which I really recommend people read because I found it so life affirming. It's, your thoughts and lessons for life.
Yeah.
Really. It's like a mate saying to you, look, this is what I try. That's how I read it. And
that's exactly what I was hoping for. That's exactly what I wanted to do, because it's like, I turned 60 and I thought, I've learned all this stuff over the years and it would be quite nice to kind of give some of that back a wee bit, because there's no point in amassing knowledge or amassing experience and then not passing it on. It just seems a wee bit daft not to do that.
Well, I loved it because there was things like, there's exercises you can do, and I did some of them. And it's things like, list your most negative qualities and then list why they're good.
Exactly. Put the good spin on it, which is great.
I was interested to read more about your sort of childhood in that book, because I didn't realise, that your mum was really young when she got pregnant wasn't she?
She was a baby. I think she was 17, which is so young. So, so young. Now, the thing about it was, which was good for me growing up, was my mum and dad were into things like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and my mum wore miniskirts and, beehives and Mary Quant makeup and all of that. So, whereas most of my friends' mums and dads were a bit sort of, I guess you could say, fuddy-duddy. Sort of very much. My mum and dad were very much the 60s, even though I was born in 1959. Yeah. And my friends' parents were the 50s. They were kind of black and white, and my mum and dad were in colour. I think it was how I sort of thought about it. That's the way it seemed to me. My mum and dad, it was like we would dance to Dusty Springfield, and my dad fixed television, so that seemed terribly glamorous, you know. And we were one of the first ones to get a colour telly. In the
really?
Days where there was like three channels and you had to get up off your bottom to switch the telly over. You had to get up and switch it over. Can you imagine?
Because your grandmother, your mum's mum, she...
Yeah.
I was interested to hear that she was not keen for your mum to have the kid, which I guess is understandable.
No.
The kid. Sorry, you,
no.
Right?
Yeah. You, no, me. No, that's true. My gran was all in favour of my mum coming down south and maybe, you know, me being given up for adoption. But it was really my dad who said, absolutely not. You know, he was, I mean, he was from the Gorbals, you know, from a, I guess what, I mean, for me, it was, I had a great childhood and I was very lucky. But yeah, my dad just said to my gran, no, I'm sorry, we're getting married and that's it. And my gran was really formidable. Will you stop grabbing that lead, you cheeky wee monkey? He does this quite a lot.
Lorraine's not talking to me, by the way. That's Angus.
Come on, baby.
So
good
that
boy.
Must have taken your dad. That makes me think that your dad has quite a strong character in some ways. To be a 17-year-old boy and to stand up to someone from an older generation and say,
very formidable lady. It was. Yeah. It took a lot. And thank goodness he did. It's one of those sort of sliding door things that you don't know what your life would have been like. I mean, who knows? It's quite strange. It was like, I remember when I was about 10, so that would have been 69, my mum and dad were thinking about going to Australia. You know, they had that thing, they were called £10 poms, and you paid £10 and you went in a boat forever and a day and made a new life for yourself in Australia. And they thought about it. And I think in the end, my mum didn't really want to leave her family, and you know, they ended up staying there. And I often think about that, about how those decisions by your parents could completely change your life. You know, it's quite remarkable. It was like, they really wanted me to go to university and I would have been the first one, big, big deal, you know, in a working class family. I would have been the first one to go to uni and my mum would have got that picture on her mantelpiece, you know, with the scroll and the hat and the cloak. And I went straight into my local newspaper
always with
instead.
A slightly horrible background.
Into
a horrible grey brown.
Yeah. So I went to my local newspaper, the East Kilbride News, and because that's what I always wanted to do, you know, I wanted to be an astronaut and then a fighter pilot, but that didn't work out. So I ended up being a journalist.
Oh, hold up, Lorraine Kelly, we're not glossing over that detail. You wanted to be a fighter pilot. I think that shows a lot of ambition, and I always use that in a positive sense.
You should always be allowed to follow your path and not feel that you're supposed to do this or supposed to do that. But back in the 70s, my early careers advisor, when I said I wanted to join the RAF and be a pilot, and they just laughed. I mean, they literally laughed. And of course, now it's all changed and we've got women in the Red Arrows, which is the best thing ever. I love to see that.
Oh, well, I have a theory about that, Lorraine, which is I think people who make a success of their careers, I think whatever they did, do you know what I mean? I don't really believe in luck. So I think had you been a fighter pilot, you were aiming pretty high, you know, for a girl in a one room in the Gorbals. But do you think your parents instilled, what do you think you got from them, like your mum and dad as individuals?
Oh, gosh. I got a massive work ethic, never, ever to take anything for granted, never to have a sense of entitlement. You have to work, you know, you have to work. And they always had this thing as well that you really made, you know, you sort of whatever you wanted to do, you could do and to go for it. I mean, they taught me to read and write before I went to primary school. I was 4 and a half and I could read and write, which gave me a massive advantage over everyone. But they weren't pushy. They just did that because, you know, like it's that thing that, you know, my dad was very, very bright, should have gone to uni. Oh, that's Angus chasing a crow. You're never going to catch a crow. But yeah, I think work ethic was the main thing, that you have to work hard. And you have to put in the graft. And I think that stayed with me forever and ever and ever. And I think that's probably why, you know, I'm still around, you know, because I put the graft in, I put the work in. You've got
and were
to.
Were you popular, Lorraine?
I wasn't a cool kid. I wasn't one of the cool kids. I was a bit geeky and a bit swotty. And also because my mum, I mean, like, you know, my mum worked, she worked in a shop, my dad fixed tellies, and they worked really hard so that both myself and my brother, you know, we only had about 2 or 3 things to wear, but they were good and they lasted you. So I did get a little bit bullied at school because I was called a snob, which is hilarious. And I don't know, maybe there was a little bit of envy there because, you know, we had my mum and dad were great, and they were always there for us, and they were always there at parents' evenings and, you know, picking us up from school and stuff like that. So yeah, there was a little bit of that. It sort of went, but I was never cool. I was never in the cool gang. You know, I was a bit of a dweeb, to be honest. Bit of a geek. But actually, I like being a geek. Quite proud of that, really. I think it's quite a good thing to be. I don't mind that. You know, if you're a wee bit different, or yes, you're a little bit of an outsider, or you know, whatever it may be, kids as a group, as a rump, sometimes pick up on that, which is really sad. And the trouble is, as well, with bullying, it certainly hasn't happened to me, but I know it happens to a lot of people, is bullies don't just stop being bullies, you know, once they leave school. Sadly, these people can take that into the workplace. And that's what's so good about now. That's why I'm you know, I think it's great. Young men and women get into the workplace now. If something isn't right, they'll sing out. They'll say, no, this is not acceptable. And that's fantastic.
That feeling of feeling different and other, sometimes that can result in you carving out your own path. And, you know, it can be a beneficial thing sometimes, can't
it? Totally. It can make you stronger. I think certainly if you look at, you know, I always find when I'm interviewing somebody who's interesting, or, you know, they're very creative, or they've achieved something incredible, usually they've had a little bit of a hard time. Not always, but usually there has been something in their life that they've got to overcome. You know, everybody always says you're stronger, you know, if you, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, kind of thing. And that can be true. That can be true.
Oh, look, Lorraine, Ray's eating daisies. Does Angus eat daisies?
Oh, Angus eats everything. I mean, I didn't want to say, but he was just whittling around there in a cow patch, and he may well have had a little few crumbles. Disgusting boy that he is.
11 is for him. So tell me about, you turned down this place at university to read, your plan was to read English and Russian.
Yeah, that's right, English and Russian.
And then what happened?
I got a job in the local newspaper. A job came up as a cub reporter in the East Kilbride News, and I applied and got the job, which I was absolutely delighted to do. I still think they are the sort of heart of the community if it's a good paper.
I
loved it. I couldn't have got a better training. It was absolutely fantastic. And then after that, I got a job at BBC Scotland. I basically applied for everything. I got a job as a researcher, which I absolutely loved. But always what I wanted to do was be a reporter. That's all I wanted to do. So I had to work during the day as a researcher, and then I worked at night as a waitress in a cocktail bar. There's a song about that. And I was so bad. I mean, like, beyond bad. Oh, I was dreadful. But I got good tips just because I was like a comedy turn, you know. I was so dreadful. But I'll tell you what, it gave me a huge respect for anybody that does that job, because it's blinking hard. It really is. I mean, the hours are so long, and, you know, and people can be really lovely, but they can also be horrible. So that was quite hard. But I've always worked out. I worked since I was 14. Yeah. I used to work in Chelsea Girl. And I really enjoyed that. I used to get £1. I get 25 pence an hour. And I was allowed, if you were 14 and you got a special permit, and you were allowed to work for 4 hours on a Saturday.
I'm seeing you as I might have been quite, you would have sound like you were very together and adulted quite young.
I think
do you know
so.
What I mean by
I think that?
That
is, yeah, I do know what you mean by that. I think because I was the oldest, and my little brother was 6 years younger than me, and of course I was a spoiled princess. And then this child from Central Casting appeared, who had the biggest blue eyes, blonde curly hair, wee chubby face, was like a cherub, and I hated him. And I was horrible to my wee brother, and I get on really, really well with him now. But he still now and again he'll bring up the time that I used to nip him under his wee fat arms, because he was just so gorgeous and annoying.
Do you think it was just jealousy? I suppose it's natural.
Oh, aye,
isn't
of
it?
Course it was. Absolutely, of course it was. And also, wee brothers are, you know, that's their job. Their job is to be really, really annoying.
Yeah, of course. And so when you went to, you ended up, I was fascinated again to learn that, because you covered Lockerbie.
Oh, it was hellish, Emily. It was absolutely hellish. And it's really weird sometimes when you least expect it. Like, say you're in an airport and you're crossing the tarmac and you smell the fuel, you know, if they're refueling and you can smell it and it brings it back. It really does. It was horrendous. Yeah. I think the only way, I was quite young, and also it was so surreal, and I think I got through it. I think everybody got through it that was reporting on it by just thinking, this is a movie. This can't be real. You know, this cannot be real. and you kind of blank it out a little bit in order to survive. Yeah. And of course, you've got a job to do. You've got to tell the story, tell people what's happening, try and make some sort of sense of it, although that story you can't. But yeah, that was really bad. And you know what? I did think to myself, earlier on that year, I'd covered the Piper Alpha disaster where so many people had died in that fire in the oil rig in the North Sea. And I thought, that's the worst thing ever. And then I thought, well, Lockerbie, nothing can ever be as bad as that. But then I covered Dunblane, and that was the worst ever.
Yeah.
The worst ever. And I think as well, because Rosie was only two at the time, and that brought it home even more. I mean, everybody felt that. You didn't have to be a mum to feel the pain of the parents. But I think when you've got a child of your own, it just made it an awful lot more, harder to bear, really. Awful. When I covered Lockerbie, that was in the December. And that's the kind of thing about the kind of job that I do and the show that it is. Because, of course, it's news and current affairs, but it's different. And back then, there weren't really shows. There was no 24-hour news back then. And we could be more, if you like, more involved, more like speaking to the viewers and speaking for the viewers and being there for them, if you like. So after Lockerbie, I got asked to come down and do just a week. That would have been in the January, just for a week, to sit on the sofa, which is very strange. Angus, come here, baby.
What's he doing? Oh,
he's gone behind a tree for a widow. Was that good?
Oh, he does weebies everywhere.
Yeah, so does Ray. I mean, he's addicted to peeing, Lorraine. I don't know what to do. Every second
what
he does it.
What is it? What is it about boy dogs that they pee on literally everything? There's not a tree, a shrub, a bush, a wee stick. He's got to pee on it. It's like, I don't know. It's like, I'll show you what's going on and I'm the boss. It's hilarious.
You suddenly found yourself on TVAM, you know.
Yeah.
And didn't an executive tell you your accent was going to be a problem?
that was crazy. That was when I worked at BBC Scotland. And the boss of BBC Scotland, I was working there as a researcher, but they used to send me out to do the Anne Finallys, you know, or if they wanted to do a vox pop, like going out and talking to the public about something silly, they would send me, because they would say, oh, they'll talk to you. So I would go and ask traffic wardens and policemen and nuns or whatever, you know, what they thought about the latest fashion or whatever was the crazy story. So I thought when the boss called me into his office that I was going to get, I knew there was a job going as a reporter. But no, he said, I'd never make it in broadcasting with my accent. And back then, nobody spoke like me. Nobody spoke like Lovely Eamon or like Anton Deck. You know, they just didn't. They had this sort of RP, quite posh-ish. And nobody really spoke like me. So I guess maybe he had a point in a sense, but then what was really good was sometimes things are sent and at the right time. There was a job going at TVAM in Glasgow to cover Scotland, and I probably wouldn't have gone for that. But I just thought, well, there's not going to be a future here, but maybe it'll be all right there. And TVAM were like, well, we need a Scottish person, and I got the job. So that was great. So,
but again, there's the fighter pilot coming out again, you see.
Not taking no
for an answer.
And then phoning up. I mean, I would never, now I wouldn't have, there's no way I would phone up a TV executive and ask for a job. For goodness sake, I'd be too shy. I'd be too shy and silly. But then I guess, you know, when you're young, you just think, oh, well, what have I got to lose? And I think that's great. I think you should hang on to that. You should never lose that sort of sense of, well, you know, nothing ventured.
It's sort of fearlessness, isn't it?
A wee bit. And sadly, I think I've lost that a bit, which is a shame. I think that happens to you as you get older, which is a shame. I was intimidated by people, by the way they spoke, the restaurants that they ate in, and the way that they lived their lives. It's completely alien to me. So I was a little bit of an outsider, but sometimes that's no bad thing. And I still get, you know, I still sort of sometimes, I'm not very good at the whole kind of red carpet malarkey. I don't really know anybody that likes that. I mean, I don't see how you can. You know, you get all done up like a dish of fish, and then you parade up and down the show. Well, I don't parade. I sort of like keep my eyes down and run as fast as I can. And I don't really like all that aspect of things. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's lovely. For me, you know, one of the great big joys of the job, it's getting to see movies before everybody, but not at premieres. I like to go to wee screenings, and that's really, really good. Don't, oh, see, you can hear that big dog. Oh my gosh. Angus, let's give him a wide berth.
It sounds like Hound of the Baskervilles.
Yes, the Hound of the Baskervilles. It's the biggest dog I've ever seen. Come on, be mad.
Yes. Social distance.
He's like, grr.
I want to find out about when you met Steve.
Yes.
I want to know about Steve. I love the sound of Steve.
Oh, he's great.
I think I really get on with Steve, and not in an inappropriate way, but he just sounds like he's been such a great companion, and you've got
he's a good man. Yeah, he's a good guy. I'm very lucky.
Did you fancy him when you were working with him and think, oh, he's nice behind the camera too?
I knew as soon as he walked in. As soon as he walked into the office. And of course, there's only four of us. It's teeny tiny, covering the whole country. Yeah. How mad is that? But as soon as he walked in, and we were pals, it took me a whole year. We were friends for a year. And then we went to Glencoe to do a mountain rescue story. And we might have had a few small sherries.
Oh, and there were you with the false eyelashes.
No, you've just seen the state of me. Because, of course, the thing about me was I never bothered with how I looked, which is weird for somebody who works in telly. And I was always getting into trouble for my hair being a mess and not having any makeup on. And so I was never a glamour puss, never.
When you get together with a friend, which I think is a nice way of doing it because you've got to know them well, there's always got to be one who breaks cover.
That was me. I just said, I can't even remember what it was. But then he asked me out to go and see Dundee United against Hearts. So that was, that was a romantic time. And I love football. And I loved, obviously I've supported Dundee United ever since. He's a big Dundee United fan. So that was great because we had a brilliant team then. And that was really good. And then we just kind of started going out. We're together all the time. And then when I had to come down to TVAM to do the sofa, I used to travel. I used to go home every weekend, back up to Dundee every weekend. And it worked. And I always remember my mum saying, well, you work when you're together 24/7. And it works when you're apart. So clearly, it's supposed to be. And I honestly don't know what I'd do without him. It's been, he's the poor soul. He's been putting up with me for years. Nearly 30 years.
I always think there's a Laurel and a Hardy. There's a sort of slightly quieter one, who's a bit more reflective. And then there's the one who's a bit, maybe sort of more a bully in social situations.
I'm definitely the quieter one. Yeah, I am.
Really?
I'm definitely the quieter one. Yeah, he's brilliant. I mean, he's the person that you want at a party. Not in a loud, annoying way. Just, that it'll be good fun and that you'll have a laugh. And he's interesting and interested. That's the thing about Steve. He's always interested. He's like me in that sense, very curious and nosiness, some people might call it in my behalf. But yeah, he would be the one who is much more sociable than me. Definitely much more sociable. He'll be the one that will say, let's have folk round or let's have a party. Or
in a way, you're on every day. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You have to do that and you love your job and that you're brilliant at it. But in a sense, it's work. when you have to do it all the time, you need to decompress a bit and socially.
Yeah.
There's probably pressure on you because I think there is that thing of if you walked into a room, I think because people sort of fantasize about you being their mom or they've grown up with you and they almost feel as if they know you. Do you know what I mean? I think there's a warmth to you where I can imagine you would get slightly descended upon, that everyone would want a bit of Lorraine. And maybe that's nice that he's slightly, and it's very welcome, but it's like, maybe that's nice that he takes some of that pressure off in a way.
Definitely. No, I think you're absolutely right. And I am much, much quieter. And obviously it's different when you're with your friends. When you're with your pals, you can totally relax and all of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. And I find that very restful, that he can do, he's quite happy to do that because I mean, people would be amazed probably to think that I'm in any way shy, but I really am. I'm
really
quite shy. I don't find the, it's like I was saying to you, I don't find the whole celebrityness thing. I mean, I don't ever think of myself as that anyway. And I'm not very good. I'm just going under a tunnel. Can you hear? I'm not very good that whole sort of red carpety thing or anything like that. I don't really do that very well.
What I like about you, Lorraine, is there's Piers Morgan, I think, called you the Iron Fist in the Velvet Glove.
And he's funny.
I like that description because
I do too.
I do. I think every woman should be an Iron Fist in a Velvet Glove.
Right. I can ask questions, even if they're, you know, a little bit difficult. There's always ways you can do it. And I'm not gladiatorial. Piers is very gladiatorial. That's his style and it works very well for him. But I'm not really like that. But I'll still ask the same kind of question. And sometimes you get more with honey than vinegar. So, you know, it can actually work for you. And especially if it's something quite delicate. Somebody's had a problem in their life or a problem in their relationship and it's tough to talk about. You have to give them the space to do that. It's a little bit like I'm inviting you into my house. So I treat you, when you come into the studio, as if you were visiting me at home, and you have to feel comfortable and relaxed, especially when you're talking about things that are so hard and so personal and so important. My thing is always, like, especially, you know, when I was talking to you about your book and about your life, you have to go away feeling that you've done yourself proud. And you know, you have to go away feeling that, I did a good, you know, I feel happy with myself. And even if it is something really hard, well, especially if it's something really hard. So that for me is always the main thing. You know, I always say that at the end when we have our debrief. You know, I'll say, I would have said, did Emily go away? Was she happy? Was she all right? She wasn't. You know, she didn't find it too upsetting or whatever, because that's, you know, because it really isn't about me. It's always about who I'm talking to, because they're the most important person, always.
Although what I like, Lorraine, is you have that, but then the iron fist part I like is when you'll suddenly there was that famous moment with the Jennifer Curry, who'd had the alleged relationship with Boris Johnson, and they did that normal sort of handing over, which we're all used to, where you say, oh, and meanwhile coming up on Lorraine, and you cut to Lorraine Kelly standing there saying, what's the point of that?
Silly women. She came up, honestly, I couldn't believe it. And that's why I love what I do, because you're like, you can do things like that. Now, I don't do it very often because it takes an awful lot to get me annoyed. I am not a person that gets riled easily. She sat there simpering and I just got really annoyed. And I thought, what's the point of you? What is the point of you coming on here and sitting there simpering and not telling me anything? Just go away. Don't annoy me. I don't do it very often, Emily. I really don't, because then it doesn't mean anything. But, you know, if you annoy me, I'll let you know.
What would Rosie say about you as a mum? What would she say was the best thing about you and the worst thing? I'm going to make you do it.
I think worst thing would be that I'm just ask her too many questions and I'm too interfering and I want to know everything. Best thing that she knows that she actually doesn't have to tell me everything. Because I think it's really important. I'm her mum and not her friend. Because she's got her pals to talk to about everything. I think she knows that I'm always, always on her side. And it wouldn't matter what she did or what she said to me or anything. She knows that I would always back her and always be there for her. I hope that she... Well, she does know that, for goodness sake. Of course she does. But that's for me, that's a given if you're a mum. But sadly, you know, I know a lot of people who, for one reason or another, their parents have turned their back on them, whether it's about their sexuality or their lifestyle or whatever. And I just don't see how you can. It baffles me. I just don't get it. Mm.
It's interesting, though, when you say that about the friendship thing, because I suppose, I guess it's, you know, your friends tell you what you want to hear, your mum tells you what you need to hear, is what I believe.
That's very good. You know?
And let's be honest, your mates often support bad life choices. Your mates will go, no one noticed you were drunk and that, you know, it's a great idea to go
he's
out with that guy.
I know, and you're like, run to the hills, my man.
I know. When you say you're going to text that guy who's been ghosting you, your friends go, yeah, I'm sure he's just been busy. He'd love to hear from you. Whereas your mum's like, leave it.
No, leave it out. She's never given me any heartache, really. She really hasn't. She's just she's a good, good kid. We're very, very lucky.
I want to ask you something, because you also, I love that you said in Shine, your book, which I love, you were really honest about just that whole thing about sometimes just having down days, which everyone does, even you.
Sure.
You know? And
absolutely.
When did you last cry?
Jesus, I nearly went this morning because we had this fantastic nurse on who, God love her, she's only a kid, she's only in her early 20s, and she had to postpone her wedding in order to work on the front line. And she was, we get a message from our gorgeous fiance, and she was crying, and Dr. Hillary was nearly gone as well. So, but yeah, I think it's all right to cry, and it's all right to feel bad, crikey, especially just now. For goodness sake, everybody has their ups and downs, and everybody has their bad times, and everybody has their little wobbles, or more than wobbles. You know, we all do. We absolutely all do, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that whatsoever. It's a human condition, and it's okay as long as you talk about it. As long as you talk about it, and that's really, really important, you know, that you talk about if you're ever feeling anxious or upset. I mean, I felt anxiety, obviously not as bad as anybody going through, you know, a real trauma or a real, you know, mental illness is a terrible, terrible thing. And we're only now beginning to understand and be, if you like, have empathy for people who've got mental illness that I can't, it wasn't that long ago that it was dismissed as somehow that you were weak. I mean, how crazy. It's just crazy when you think about that. So, it's just about acknowledging it and talking about it, making sure that you talk to your pals and don't bottle it all up, because that's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, actually, I found it helpful when I heard you talking about your miscarriage, and I have found that really helpful, because, you know, I've had friends that have gone through that, and it did make me think, I don't know if I've sort of considered the impact as someone who hasn't experienced that, that must have had on them. And that's very helpful for other people to know that, you know.
I think so. I mean, what I found really upsetting about that whole time, and that was, you know, it was a long time ago, and it wasn't really talked about. And of course, nobody ever talked about the effect it would have on your partner or your husband, or, you know, it was all kind of like, you know, you shouldn't really talk about these things, but you've got to. And what I found appalling was how common it was, you know. And I thought, you know, that I know people were being well-meaning. They're saying, oh, you know what, this is very common and it happens to so many people. And that just made me feel worse, because I thought there's so many people that are going through this. That's horrendous. Mm. So you have to, you know, you have to kind of acknowledge these things and give them their place in your life. And it's okay to mourn. And it's okay to mourn the life that you thought you were going to have. And also to make sure that your husband or your partner's okay as well.
Do you think, on reflection, you soldiered on a bit, you know?
Oh, I do. That's me. That's totally me. It's just like, no, it'll be fine. It'll be fine.
I've encountered people where I feel they're investing slightly too much in this thing, which is a job, essentially. And you just think, no, keep your life separate. This is fine. But it's like you always put your ballet pumps on and you take your shoes off. To me, that's very symbolic of how you treat your career, in a way. I do.
Yeah.
I think it's like you're saying, this was me and this was Lorraine, it's great, but now I'm going back to Steve and Angus and that's ballet
and life
pumps.
And proper life. Yeah. And the first thing I usually do is take my makeup off. I mean, Helen, who does my makeup and has been doing it for years, is a genius. Absolute genius. But there's nothing better than putting your comfies on. And at the moment, I've just got different degrees of comfy that I'm wearing. I mean, what I've got on just now is like not that bad, but what I wear at home is like, you know, the horrible grey ones that have been washed and washed and washed and got holes in the bottom, but you still wear them because they're comfy.
I loved it when I saw you on a show, and they always ask you, who's your favourite? But I loved it when you said, oh, Kevin Spacey was a real knob.
Oh, he was awful. He was the worst. He was not a nice person. No, no, no. Do you know what it is? See, the thing
your instinct was right, it turned out, Lorraine.
I know. That was, and it was such a shame, because, you know, when you really like their work, that I love House of Cards. At the time, House of Cards was the big, big, big thing. And he just was rude, and he just, you know, and you just think, oh, mate, you know, you're an actor. Can you not just act being a nice person for 10 minutes? You know, that's all we're asking you to do. But it's when, I always find it's like, it's not so much how people treat me, but it's how they treat the person that's bringing them a cup of tea, or the person that's putting their microphone on, or, you know, if they're offhand with them and downright dismissive, then I think, nah. And then you just get somebody like Hugh Jackman, where everybody round about him is beaming with happiness, and they're all so, you know, so delighted to be there, because he, you know, they said, oh, there's cows ahead of us. Oh, Angus, no.
Steve, you see, I think is probably a good benchmark as well. He's a good litmus test, because whenever someone's famous, and you notice people just gravitating towards that person and totally acting as if their partner isn't there and doesn't exist.
Oh, I don't like that. That's so rude.
Oh, But I think it's really useful when you see that, because you're like, okay, that you just failed.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Oh, we all know that there are people who really wouldn't be bothered with you if you were not on the telly. And that's a wee bit sad. Mind you, you see, I don't have celebrity pals. You know, I don't really... But then,
no.
I suppose I do, but to me, they're not. It's just like my gang, you know. It's like, it would be Mark, who I do my fashion with, or Dr. Hillary, or, you know, any of the gang that I work with. But they're my work colleagues in the same way that they would be my work colleagues
yeah.
if I worked in a restaurant or I worked anywhere. They're your pals because they're your pals, not just because, oh, there's another cow.
Have you ever had therapy? And would you have
No,
it?
I haven't. Oh, absolutely. Of course, if I needed it, you bet. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, I think I think because anything that I've gone through, I have had Steve to talk to. I've got my mum. I've got my best friend, Joyce. We've been best friends since I was 11. And so I've got people that I can talk to. Having said that, if I felt that I was really, really struggling, I would have no hesitation at all in getting professional help. I think it's absolutely the wise thing to do. I mean, if you had, you know, if your feet were weird, you go to a foot specialist, don't you? So, I mean, of course, you should always, always get that. Sometimes, actually, it's a good idea.
You said that you're impatient. Tell me about some Lorraine impatient moments. So when do you get impatient with people? Or with any situations?
I guess if people, I think it might be the fact that I talk in sort of like 10-minute chunks with guests. So people not getting to the point, you know, it's like, get to the point, for goodness sake. Sometimes people doing interviews. Like, see some of these briefings.
How dare
and then
you
they have the questions, you know. You know these briefings they have right now, and then you've got questions afterwards. And I think, for the love of God, ask a straight question, and if you don't get a straight answer, go in with the killer second question. Don't just waffle. So that annoys me.
Yeah.
Waffling.
Yeah.
Waffling annoys me. But it takes a lot.
I'm absolutely terrified. I'm living on the edge now.
But no, there you go.
Also, I love that you've opened up about the menopause. It's really helpful that women are talking about it now, because there was a time when it was a secret.
I know. How mad is that? It's crazy. It's going to happen to all of us. And sadly, sometimes it happens to women soon, you know, if they get ill or just, you know, bad luck or whatever. Women started talking about it. We did approach a few women in the public eye, and most of them said they didn't want to talk about it because they felt that would make people feel that they were old. And I thought that was really sad, because, I mean, I don't know, I'm very open about it. And, you know, I take HRT. I know that doesn't work for everyone, but it's been a game changer for me, and it makes me feel better. It gets rid of the anxiety. I found I just got very anxious, and that's not me, and I couldn't understand it. And I felt like I'd lost myself for a while. It was really strange.
Really?
Really bizarre. So in the end, what we did was Dr. Hillary and I just had a chat about it on the show, about my experiences. He sort of interviewed me, you know, for a change. There is a queue every morning of people. It's like, I've got a sore bum, I've got a sore elbow, blah, 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 whatever, whatever. And he's just brilliant. He's so good. I think he knows me even more than my husband in many ways. He's very good. We got a great response about the menopause, and it got a debate going, and that's all you can ask, you know. If you make it easier for people, and then, you know, we try to give facts, but we also try to give a bit of hope as well, which I think is really
important.
Well,
I think it feels real, particularly if you're putting yourself on the line and opening up. And I think that does make a difference. You know, I know, you know, Jonathan Ross always says when he's watching people on telly, he says that's the difference between, I guess, the great and the good, is people that you feel authentic and you feel, oh, that's them, you know, which is something that you have. Everyone wants you to be their mum. You're the mum that everyone wishes they'd had.
The mum that would take them out and get them incredibly drunk.
No, because I feel you'd give me tough love advice.
Yeah,
like,
no, that's true. I would.
There'd be the odd Boris Johnson's alleged girlfriend moments where you'd say, what are you talking about? What's the point of that?
Yeah.
And I'd freeze. But then I think you'd give me hugs and you'd love me and look after
sure.
me. Look, this is where I'm asking you to be my mother, Lorraine. It's all gone a bit strange.
It's all fine. I'm very happy to so do.
I was very impressed. In addition to your OBE and all your other accolades and achievements, you're an ambassador. Not in the traditional Ferrero Rocher sense of the word, but you're an ambassador for Tails.com, which is
Tails. It's lovely.
Tell me about Tails then.
Well, it's just a great idea.
You can order food from them.
Yeah. And loads and loads of advice, which is smashing. And what I think makes it really special is when you order the food, it comes to you, but it says the name of your dog on it. So it's tailored to your dog.
Oh, it doesn't.
Like, yeah, which is great. So Angus gets treats sent with Angus on it and food sent with his name on it. And obviously, because all dogs are different. There you are, you're cuddling your wee dog and having to carry him. So he needs different food to Angus, who's always on the go, you know, typical border terrier and running about like a wee crazy thing. So yeah, it's all about tailoring the food to your specific dog. And of course, right now, being able to do that online is just such a joy. You know, to be able to do that, to just and know that it's going to get to you and you're not going to run out. I think that's really good. And it's just dead easy. I mean, anything that's going to be easy for you. And he loves it. He loves his wee sticks in the morning and he loves his treats. He really likes things with beetroot in them, which I have to say that I don't.
So it's a subscription service, basically.
Yeah. You sign up. But as well as that, it's kind of like you could go, just giving him a treat. You kind of are part of a community. And do you know what? He does actually, he'd run around all day. And his wee coat's in a really good, apart from the fact that it's huge because he's not being stripped or he's not being groomed, but he just looks great. So it's good. And it's that thing of if you've got any worries, they've got a vet that you can get in touch with. And especially just now, there's a real kind of online community. And it's a good, it is. It's just really good. Anything, you know what it's like. We do anything for it. Oh, he's wanting to go back in the water. What are you doing?
Well, there's a lot of. You said a nice thing about Angus, which I loved. You said, which I related to having lost my family, you said when Rosie left and you got Angus, you said it was nice to have another heartbeat in the house. And that,
absolutely.
I'm not going to lie, it made me well up a bit.
I know, it's true though, isn't it? I think it's really, really important. And it's somebody, you know, I take care of him, I look after him and I want the best for him. And I think that's really, really, really important. And because we've all got that in us, isn't it? We want to nurture and care for them. But do you know what? He gives me back much, much more than I give him. You know, I mean, I might give him food and, you know, a nice place to, well, he basically sleeps wherever he likes. I know that you're not supposed to do that, but he can go wherever he wants.
Does he get on the bed with you and stay? Oh, Angus.
Of course. He has done that since he was a puppy. Usually he does that when I've just changed the duvet and spent like 15 minutes battling to get on, and then he comes running in with his wee muddy paws and you just think, oh, but you can't be, you look at that wee face, you cannot be cross. It's impossible to be cross with that wee face.
You're a bit of a neat freak, Lorraine, as well.
I am. I'm terrible.
What's that about? That's interesting. I like neat
control,
freaks because...
Control.
Is it?
It's all about control, I think so. And especially in times like this where we don't really have control over great big giant things. But we do have control over how neat our knicker drawer is. And mine is a thing of beauty and joy. It's so neat. It's colour coordinated. I've got my big knickers and my wee knickers, depending on what sort of state my bottom is. And yes, it's a joy. It's very good.
You heard it here first, everyone. Lorraine Kelly's knicker drawer is a thing of beauty and joy.
Of beauty and joy. Absolutely.
So, but that's interesting. I'm envious of... Are you type A, Lorraine? Do you know what I mean by that? Those people that are very driven and tidy and organised, and those are my heroes. Because
I guess I am a little bit, but I think I don't want to be that stiff and unyielding and unbending.
Yeah.
You know, I like to sometimes let my hair down. I don't do it as often as I used to. But yeah, I think that's important as well. I think you've got to have fun. You know, I think sometimes you can go along a road or, you know, along train tracks and you're very focused and all of that. But sometimes you just need to get a little bit drunk and a little bit silly.
Because
that's important as well, you know. And also I think what this whole madness has taught us is, you know, we always say it and it's true about friends and family, but oh my goodness me, I miss my mum and dad and I obviously miss my daughter. I miss cuddles. I mean, Angus is not a cuddly dog.
Is he not?
But no, he's not. Well, border terriers generally are not cuddly. You know, he won't sit on your knee that much. And I have been cuddling him and he's kind of tolerating it, but he's not that happy about it. And you can see him, he goes all stiff and Scottish. You know, he goes all kind of like, oh, okay, then you can cuddle me, but will you please not take too long?
I've lived with people like that before.
He doesn't really like it, but he'll put up with it. you'll put up.
But
with
that's probably quite good, you see, because I think Ray, I've sort of made him. I mean, he is cuddly, but I think I don't want him
gorgeous.
To be sort of. I know, but I think I'm turning him into the sort of Anthony Perkins, you know, in Psycho. That's my fear, Lorraine.
Oh, they'll be so... No, he'll be fine. He's gorgeous. He's got a great wee nature. He's so cute. He's like a wee pyjama case. He's beautiful.
I always say to people, what do you most worry people will say about you when you leave the room? And what do you hope they'd say?
I hope they say she's a laugh and she's really funny and I want to spend more time with her. I would hate people to say that she's really boring and really dull and I really can't be arsed with her and I don't want to hear any more of her nonsense. I think that would be terrible. I'd be
Lorraine,
devastated.
I'm sorry to tell you. What did your mum say when you got the OBE? Was she thrilled?
Oh, they were. Both of them, my mum and my dad. I mean, it was just like, oh my God. And when it happened, it was with the Queen, which is amazing, in Edinburgh.
Oh, shut up. You didn't get the Queen.
I got the Queen. And do you know what? My mum afterwards, mum said, oh my God, what did she say to you? She was chatting away. And I don't know. You know that way when you're so nervous that in your ears all you can hear is your own pulse going da-da-da-da-da-da, like your heart beating. and I was crying and I couldn't hear a thing she said. She could have been saying anything. She could have been saying, you know, we would like to welcome you into our family and, you know, you can marry Harry or something. Could you imagine?
Can you imagine her sitting in Buckingham Palace saying, that's very rude of Lorraine Kelly not to get back to me when I made her that very generous offer.
Oh, I couldn't hear it. I couldn't hear what she was saying. But she's so teeny tiny and she's just like, it was like, being in front of the whole of Great Britain, you know, this little tiny lady. And it was fantastic. And it was a great excuse, any excuse for a party. So it was terrific. It really was. It was a lovely, lovely day. It's one of those days you want to put in a little box and put a ribbon on it. And then when you're feeling a bit down, open it up and remember it. You know, it was just great. It was great.
Would you say you were an optimist or a pessimist?
I think I'm an optimist. I would always say that. I would always say that I always try to find the light. Even in the worst possible scenario, you know, I always try and, you know, and sometimes I would imagine sometimes that can be very irritating, but I do try.
I should let you get on with Angus now. What are your plans? Are you going back home now? And is he going to have a bath?
Yeah.
You give him a bath?
Yeah, he's been in the water. He's absolutely minging. He smells weird. So yes, I'm going to give him a right good old scrub and then dry him. And of course, just now it takes ages for him to dry because his wee fur is so long. It's been lovely. And we'll do it again properly. When all this is over, we'll just go for a proper, proper walk and a right good blather. Bye, Ray, my wee lamb. Bye, baby.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that. And do remember to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes.